Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Yom Kippur and the Kol Nidre ceremony. As Rosh Hashanah is now past us and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, Simchat Torah are all approaching, please discuss with your friends this podcast series. Let them know how easy it is to have Torah on the go wherever you are and wherever they are. Please help them out with the technical details. Some people are not so good at that kind of a thing. And remember that you don't need an iPod to listen to a podcast. You can listen on your computer or cell phone. Thanks very much for sharing the podcast with your friends and neighbors. This week, Rabbi Daniel Landes discusses Yom Kippur and the Kol Nidre ceremony. Rabbi Daniel Landes is the director of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. And now, Rabbi Daniel Landes.
Thank you, Larry. Right before Yom HaKippurim, and of course, right off the bat, we have the impressive, overwhelming ceremony of Kol Nidre. I believe it's not just the music, as deeply moving as it is. It's not only, but importantly, the communal setting. It's because that it makes all this impression upon us, how awesome it really is because it is a very important legal mechanism, a legal transformation. So even for those of us who don't think in legal terms, we need to go back and to understand Kol Nidre in terms of what it does legally. Kol Nidre is a variation of a legal device known as Hatarat Nedarim Unedavot, the release of vows and oaths. And the two operative terms here are Nedarim and Shavuot. Nedarim, called Nidre Ushvue, has both terms in the beginning. The release of vows and oaths. Neder is a vow. Shavuot is an oath. And while Kol Nidre, after mentioning these two terms, mentions a whole bunch of others, they are either related to gifts to the temple, which is not really relevant right now, important but not relevant, or they are variations of Neder and Shavuah, of oaths and vows, of vows and oaths. That's really what I want to focus on in order to try to get to the heart of what's going on in Kol Nidre. So we're going to speak about what is a Shavuah. I'm going to start there, a Shavuah. What is an oath? And what is a neder? What is a vow? And what's the problematics? Both of these are terms that are dialectically related to each other, as we'll see. Shavuah is an oath. Acts is either an affirmation of a matter of fact, or it's an affirmation of a commitment regarding an action, and evokes a direct or indirect mention of the holy name of God. And there's four types of Shavuot. The most important type of Shavuah that we need to be concerned with is what's called a Shavuot Shav, a vain oath. And there are three possibilities here, all of which in which one uses God's name. And being a vain oath, you take God's name in vain. And really, there's three pieces to this Shavuot Shav, a vain oath. The one case is one swears what is truthfully and commonly known to be true is in fact true. So you swear that a stone in the backyard is indeed a stone, or that two is two, and you swear that. That's a Shavuot Shav. It does not necessitate the evoking of God's name to claim that what is true is true. A Shavuot Shav, however, is also when one swears that one will void a mitzvah. That is not to sit in a sukkah, not to eat matzah, not to put on tefillin. That is a Shavuot Shav because you're going against a command. And finally, a Shavuot Shav can be that one swears that one will do something which is impossible. One swears that one will not sleep for 3 days. It's impossible not to sleep at all for 3 days straight. And therefore, this is called a vain oath. All these are considered taking God's name in vain. All these in the classic way of punishment would be the punishment of flogging. If you've done inadvertently, tshuva is necessary. That is a shvua, and that's a shvuat shav, a vain oath, which will become important for us to understand what's called nidre u'shvuye, what this ceremony is trying to free us from. At this point, let's talk about what a neder is. A neder is a vow. A vow in temple times could refer to the commitment to bring a voluntary sacrifice. That we're not going to focus on. That's not what we do today. But a neder, in its more common usage, is a personal decision not to do something or not to derive benefit from someone. A neder is therefore a negative declaration to forbid oneself from something that otherwise would have been permitted. And we see this already in Bamidbar, the 30th chapter, Numbers 30th chapter. Ish ki yador neder l'Hashem u'yishava shvua l'asor yisar al nafsho lo yachel devaro k'chol yotzei mipiv yaseh. A person, when he will vow a vow to the Lord or swear an oath to forbid something upon himself, he should not make profane that matter. Whatever he says, he should do. Now, a neder, being a negative declaration to forbid oneself from something that otherwise would have been permitted, could mean, for example, one takes a neder, a vow, not to eat certain fruits from a certain fruit stand that one might otherwise patronize. A neder differs from the positively articulated shvua in several ways, but one important way is that a neder does not need to involve or evoke God's name. All that one need do is declare that a particular item or practice is forbidden to oneself, and he should not break his word on this. A neder, in a positive communal sense, religious sense, is most commonly used to ensure a religious discipline. For example, one will say, I make a neder, I will refrain from sitting during the chanting of the Torah. Such a practice, if articulated verbally as a neder, or even if not articulated, one of just one practices for a certain period of time, it becomes a vow, becomes a neder, and it needs to be continued. This neder, by forbidding an action upon, forbidding oneself from a certain object, can have a great religious meaning, because one can use this to add a certain rigor, and if I can use the word, even stringency, in one's religious performance. Rabbi Cook, the great Jewish mystic and thinker and Zionist, wrote about the neder in his spiritual diary of Shmona Prakim, his personal journal. The neder vow represents the depth of natural revelation of the faith instinct that manifests itself in thought, in expression, in action. One should not profane one's word. The neder is the boundary line that protects an individual's personal belief from being overwhelmed by the flow of the great light of codified obligation given on high from the mouth of Supreme God. See, for Rav Kook, he sees two orders to the moral spiritual life. The first is Torah, it's divine, it's compelling, it's composed upon us, even while it elevates us. The second is self-legislating. Take it this way, is that the Torah already gives us a full, complete system. Where is our personal part to this? He sees that personal part of that in a neder, a self-legislation, a natural morality, even a natural revelation that we tame from within ourselves as we seek through a sense of personal inner obligation to advance to an even higher ethical spiritual level. This is where neder fits in. It's purely personal. It's an added obligation that goes beyond the formal codified requirements of Torah. But given its own elevated status by that very same codified halacha that it surpasses. Halacha, see, is universal to entire Jewish people. The neder, on the other hand, is custom-tailored, specific is custom tailored by the individual for one's own ethical spiritual needs, but is validated and given full worth by halacha alongside divine revelation itself. So the letter can be a source of moral spiritual strengthening beyond, as it were, the letter of the law. And by extension, one can make a shavua in the same direction of doing higher and higher levels of observance. Both signify higher human commitment, as such, cannot be renounced. Once it's self-legislated within the context of halacha, it becomes a mitzvah that one has to do, and it becomes a sin, a transgression, not to commit to it. So both this can happen with a neder and a shavua, but there is an intrinsic difference between neder and shavua, and that goes to what we must say is the dark side. There's something amazing within halacha, and we'll go to the formulation of the master of Jewish law, Maimonides. Get this. I could never have written this. It's unbelievable. If a person says, I'm quoting Maimonides, if a person says, eating matzah on Pesach, sitting in the sukkah on Sukkot, or putting on tefillin is forbidden to him, then these are forbidden to him. And if such a person then ate matzah on Passover, sat in the sukkah on Sukkot, or put on tefillin, he is flogged, or he deserves flogging, for breaking his neder. And if this ruling is not puzzling enough, Maimonides simultaneously rules, and this seems to be contrary to logic, that Shavuot, attempting to cancel one's performance of the mitzvah, have no effect. So you have a double problem. How can a neder really cancel a mitzvah? And if it can, it has. Why isn't that same power given to a shavua? The shavuot and neder and the shavua and neder are obviously different, but therefore, but in what way and how? So let me explain it. The shavua really responds to the person, herself, himself. It refers to what you are going to do, was incumbent upon you to do, that you are now self-legislating. That's what a shavua is. And there is a certain rule by shavua, is that one shavua cannot cancel another shavua. Therefore, one makes a shavua that I will always wear casual clothes on casual Friday. One cannot then, one is then obligated to wear casual clothes on casual Friday. But if then says, oh, I'll make a shavua that I will wear formal clothes on casual Friday, no good. The second shavua can't cancel out the first. Now, that principle that one shavua cannot cancel out the other tells us why Maimonides, explains why Maimonides says that one cannot make a shavua that goes against Jewish law. Why? Because we have a prior shavua. Mushba va'omed mehar Sinai. Every Jew has already sworn his fealty as he stood at the mountain of Sinai in the primary revelation of the Ten Commandments, the revelation of the entire Torah at Sinai. Mushba v'omed mehar Sinai. And since he already swore, na'aseh v'nishma, we shall do, we shall obey, one cannot override it with another shavua saying, I will not do and I will not obey. And therefore, a shavua contrary to go that propels you contrary to halacha, which deals with yourself, cannot be done. But interestingly enough, you still can make that neder. And you can say, matzah on Pesach is forbidden to me. The sukkah is forbidden to me on Sukkot. Tefillin is forbidden to me. Just three examples. Can be anything else. How can a person make a neder that effectively obviates a mitzvah? The answer is that the person who's obligated at Sinai, it's the person who's obligated at Sinai, not the objects of halacha, the matzah, the sukkah, tefillin, to which the person relates. The neder falls on the object, not the person. If one forbids a matter, an object, a thing, matzah, sukkah, tefillin, through a neder, Maimonides writes, it is the thing, it is the matter which is forbidden. And the thing, the matter, is not part of the principle of being obligated out from the moment of standing at Har Sinai. Halacha therefore distinguishes, listen to me, you'll understand. Halacha distinguishes between the subject making an oath, which would be Shavua, and in which case a person makes an oath regarding a object, which is a neder. The object as it is, as it were, already at some distance existentially from oneself. A neder is the halachic means by which one may choose to alienate that object even further. So this distinction should be relevant to us as contemporary Jews. For some Jews, the object is already alien to them. Matzah, sukkah, probably not necessarily those two, but could be. Tefillin, it could be kashrut, it could be almost anything, is alien to them. And in a certain sense, halacha understands, doesn't want a person to make such a neder, but validates the integrity of the individual who says, these things are alien to me. Therefore, I will not eat the matzah, I will not sit in the sukkah, I will not put on tefillin, because these matters are as objects alien to me. I make such a neder, I make such a vow. So we're in a very interesting situation. What a person says can have tremendous impact. While a person cannot make a shavua, in which an oath in which they take the self, the subject, out of connection to mitzvot, because the self already obligated himself or herself at Sinai. Mushba vomi bar Sinai, they already stood up and they already expressed an oath at Sinai. Nonetheless, a person could go further than the halacha and make an oath in which they'll do even more and more. And at the same time, a person who is alienated from some of these objects of halacha, or many of the objects of halacha, can make a neder, can make a vow, formally testifying to the fact, these objects are distant from me and will remain distant, and the halacha represents it. Therefore, the halacha, which wants us, and desperately wants us to fulfill our oaths and vows, realizes that human beings may have hoisted themselves by their own petards. They're on the hook. Perhaps they have made a shavua to do too much. They've made an oath to obligate themselves too much further. Perhaps they've made a neder which concretizes a kind of alienation which may remain forever, in which a person who's a Jew becomes, as it were, not a Jew. So the halacha therefore formulated the hatzarat nedarim u'shavuot, this release of vows. Lo yachel devaro. The verse says, you shall not make profane your word. And they understand it in a very technical reading. You may not make profane your word, but perhaps a court, a beit din, a community can gather together and free you from this. And that's what Kol Nidre is all about. Kol Nidre turns to the zealous religiously sensitive Jew and says, you may have accepted upon yourself more than the mitzvah demands. Here, let us free you from that so that you can concentrate on what you need to concentrate. It turns to the sensitive Jew who feels alienated from tradition and therefore is articulated and, as it were, legislated for herself or himself a complete alienation from aspects of tradition and say, not so fast. Not so fast. Even though we respect this, let's take you off your hook. Let us free you from that situation. Let us have, on the day before Rosh Hashanah, a small kind of service which takes place, in which we act as a beit din in small groups, in which individuals come before these small courts and say, and at the end of tefillah, at the end of services, and say, let me free myself from all these obligations and vows, negative and positive, that I have taken. And then we have the large communal conversation of that, which is called Nidre, which says, if I'm overzealous, let me calm down so I can focus on what I need to focus. If I'm so alienated, let me be less alienated. Let me be able to try again. I wish you all a wonderful Yom Kippur, a meaningful Yom Kippur, a fast which is transformative, and a Kol Nidre which frees us. Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Unfortunately, the email system for sending your comments to us here at the podcast is not working due to a infrastructure change at the Pardes email system. So hang on to your comments. And in the meantime, thank you again for tuning in to Pardes from Jerusalem.